right. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope, so no overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones, bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV and the antimedia.org/radio. Really happy to be back alive and well on this Wednesday, December 20th, 2017. Yeah, it's really great. Glad everybody's continuing to listen to us, and really enjoyed our show on Monday talking about some extraterrestrial stuff, getting away from the politics, man, because, you know, politics is a crapshoot. All we do is really just insulate ourselves from the influence of politicians, I think, is really the more effective route to go. Because, look, fighting back and forth for the levers of power between Republican and Democrat is a fucking waste of time. And I still have so many friends that are out there just still pulling for Bernie Sanders. I can't believe it. I mean, I understand it, I guess, because I went through that phenomenon back in 2012. And maybe I just am a bit jaded because of, you know, I've been 5 years now on that front of, all right, Republican and Democratic politics is not going to solve this thing here, because the people that are in control of the levers of power will never let anybody from outside of that, you know, paradigm be put in charge of it. And, you know, 5 years later, I'm a bit, you know, jaded about the whole political thing. And I still see people out there, some of my friends, still going out doing political activism for Bernie Sanders, like the Bernie, you know, the never Hillary kind of progressive left wing, you know, people who I wouldn't call them Democrats really, but you know, they wind up, you know, getting in one way or another absorbed by the Democratic Party. I still see them out there just doing a lot of work and spending a lot of energy and a lot of money out there trying to do this thing, and I understand their struggle and all that, but it's just, to me anyway, it's become apparent that we shouldn't be fighting to put our guy in charge of the levers of power, because first of all, when you're talking about someone like, for instance, like Ron Paul or like Bernie Sanders, you got a slim, very, very slim chance of it actually happening. Second of all, the guy gets in and he gets reduced to nothingness by the Congress, and or the deep state. And thirdly, And this is the thing that people, nobody ever wants to think about is, sure, you get your guy in, then what? I mean, what about all the people who, that isn't their guy? What about all the people that hate Bernie Sanders because they think he's a communist? What about all the conservatives? And vice versa, you know, if you're a Trump supporter, you get your guy in, and okay, cool. What about all the other people who disagree? And there's a lot of them. He's the least popular sitting president ever. So there's a lot of people who don't agree with that stuff. So the whole premise here is to get your guy in charge and to get your team in power. It's by its very nature is actually immoral, because you're trying to impose your worldview upon people who don't necessarily see it that way. And sure, I disagree with a bunch of people about a bunch of different things, and I think a lot of people are idiots. But at the same time, that doesn't make me the moral standard bearer for Americans or for mankind, where I can say, hey, you know what, screw you guys, you're idiots, you're going to do it my way. As much as I feel like, yeah, that might be an improvement over things, those people are going to be pissed off at me, and they're going to hate me, and they're going to want to get rid of me, they're going to want to vote me out, or they're going to want to kill me, or whatever. And so this is the conundrum. And I know I've kind of railed against democracy recently. I have no problem with democracy in the workplace. I have no problem with worker organizations. I have no problem with private or community or consensual democracy. But the problem is that in the United States and in most countries around the world, the democracy that you're in is not really consensual. You're kind of involuntarily subjected to it, and you're stuck with it. And I didn't vote for Donald Trump. I didn't support Donald Trump, yet here he goes today doing his tax cuts, which I haven't looked close enough into, but I'm almost positive that they're going to benefit the extremely wealthy people in a way that makes the tax cuts that the poor people actually get look like nothing. And not only that, but the bigger problem here is that these tax cuts nobody's asking how they're going to be, like, how the budget is going to be affected, because these guys aren't cutting the budget. In fact, just several days ago, Trump just signed a $700 billion National Defense Authorization Act, which increases military spending. So what I'm getting to here is that this is, sure, it's a tax cut in the short term. You may have a little bit higher on your paycheck. You may get a little more back on your tax return. And if you're rich, yeah, you're going to get a lot back. You're going to pay a lot less taxes. Cool. And you guys know I'm against taxation and all that stuff. But how is this stuff going to be paid for? Well, more debt, more deficits, more printing money, and therefore the poor people are going to get fucked once again with the inflation, the devaluation of the dollar, and your kids are going to wind up paying for all these cuts because they're not cutting the budget. They're keeping the spending, or they're increasing the spending. And they're increasing it in the wrong places where, you know, yeah, maybe the humanitarian case could be made for better healthcare or better, you know, education or something. But they're spending it on killing more people in war. That is not, you know, it's inexcusable. And then they're cutting taxes at the same time. So it's like, well, shit, where's the money going to come from? Well, it's going to come from the Social Security numbers assigned to your children. And they're going to have to be paying that stuff. And, the kids are born now with like $65,000 in debt and rising. And so when you're born in this country, you're born into this involuntary pseudo-republic, which is actually an oligarchy. And, you know, we're talking about some very fundamental, structural, and moral issues here with this. And yet the main conversation is like, well, if only my team were in charge, if only my guy were, if my head coach got in charge of the team, then everything would be much better. And it's cool when you're talking about football, because you choose to watch football, you choose not to. You choose to care about it, you choose not to. That's fine. But it's different when the football coach is Donald Trump and he's got an involuntary contract over each and every one of us where he says, you know, I'm going to do this with your money and fuck, good luck if you want to not pay it because we'll throw you in jail. And so I don't even know what the point I was trying to get to here, but I guess the overall thing here is that we need to start working to insulate ourselves from the will of politicians, because all these dudes do is buy and sell in our misery, and they say, oh, it's just, oh, this guy is going to do this for the poor and this for the old and this for the sick. And, you know, and Hillary Clinton is going to do this for the poor and this for the sick and this for the elderly. All they're doing is buying and selling in our misery. And they use it like a damn advertising tool. And then in the end, I really haven't seen Donald Trump improve healthcare. I haven't seen him help the poor. I haven't seen him increase our security, because the more you fight war on terror, you actually make yourself more vulnerable. He's grown the deficit, so he's actually putting the elderly at more risk because their retirements are going to get more insolvent. And so these guys just buy and sell in our misery. They keep promising that they're going to fix shit. Shit keeps getting worse. And so instead of fighting over the levers of power, in my opinion, we should be fighting to say, you know what, screw it. You guys can keep that. You guys do your thing. You guys can go pretend like you're in charge of something, and you guys can go pretend like you're doing something, but I'm going to insulate myself from you. And I wish that people would put more energy in that direction rather than fighting over whose team is going to run the, you know, football field. I think we should fight over building our own stuff. And democracy can be used in the right way. But like I said, community-run organizations, counter-governmental organizations, organizations that help people, organizations that actually, you know, help people get health care, help the needy, help the poor, help the elderly. They don't have to be run by the government. In fact, they shouldn't be run by the government, because then the government can't buy and sell in these commodities, basically, is what they've created out of these things. If they weren't in charge of that stuff, it would be a lot easier for all of us to say, you know what? What in the world are we even doing having politicians now? Our healthcare is fine because we have organizations set up to take care of that. Welfare is fine. Kids aren't starving on the street. People aren't dying of chronic poverty because we have organizations set up to a safety net set up for that. There's a cryptocurrency-based retirement set up for people getting older and getting into retirement. Cool. All that stuff's taken care of. Can you remind me again why we have the government? This to me is where we should be going with political activism, is getting these guys out of the way. That's all they do. They get in the way of progress. Republican, Democrat, Bernie Sanders, Ron Paul. Sure, like, I have a soft spot for some of these guys, but all they do is give us false hope and get in the way of our own progress, because we don't need politicians to give us progress. We need to say, you know what, screw it. We don't need politicians anymore. You guys are just middlemen. That's all you are. Anyway, long enough rant here. Let's get the show on the road. I've got our awesome journalist, Jake Anderson, co-hosting with me tonight, apparently. What's up, Jake? How you doing, man?
I'm good, Nick. Up to my usual shenanigans, trying to stay positive despite all signs to the contrary. I think that was a pretty good take on the situation we're in. Of course, it's factoring in the complexity of managing a diverse population, which, of course, is what statists argue, is the sheer volume and complexity of a, you know, diverse population necessitates a governing body. And then there, of course, there are people that think that everything would be better managed if it was simply a free market. And I'll be honest with you, I inherently, like you, kind of disagree with both. Though, in a practical sense, I think it's good to be activists and optimistic about trying to bring down government, but in a more realistic sense, I can't imagine a scenario in which government is not going to exist, at least in the next 50 years. Even if one government were to be dismantled, something would just take its place. So I think you were hitting upon the correct path, which is to look for ways to naturally grow organic, non-governmental structures within society that will eventually make government obsolete. And I do think in 50 to 100 years, it will be obsolete, because with the rise of AI and with humans augmenting their intelligence, we're just not going to have a lot of the problems that we have now. Now, there will be new problems, of course, but there won't be the problems we have now in a post-scarcity future, which is where we're headed. But there's always going to be very complex issues. There's always going to be lunatics. And that's how government rises, is in a vacuum where there are lunatics and people afraid of those lunatics. And by lunatics, I mean sociopaths and psychopaths, both of them. So yeah, it's a complex issue, and I commend you for trying to deconstruct it in a way that makes sense.
Yeah, dude. I mean, it really is a tough issue. And let's face it, dude. Governments rise out of necessity. You know, like you said, dude. There's chaos, and there's, you know, warlords, and there's religious cults, and there's things that really disrupt peaceful people. And then governments rise out of necessity. Now, of course, when a government rises and realizes levers of power, and it starts, the people running it become wealthy and their friends become wealthy and all that, it's very illogical to think that these guys are going to try to actually, like, legitimately, permanently solve problems, because then they give up their power. So governments may rise, I think, out of necessity or out of circumstance, but later on they just create a demand for themselves by keeping the chaos going. I think, you know, the war on terror is a perfect example of that. I mean, anybody with really strong understanding of foreign policy knows that, you know, knows that the U.S. is basically creating a permanent market for its, you know, national defense, you know, establishment or whatever, you know. And so that's just one example of the government creating a need for itself. And but yeah, dude, I mean, the way I see this progressing is not out of revolution. If we have a revolution tomorrow, and I see people all the time like, oh, we're going to have a revolution and we're going to overthrow, and, you know, and a lot of them are conservatives and stuff. And yeah, we're going to, you know, if they're, you know, talking about overthrowing Obama and that kind of thing. And then what? What do you put in its place? And of course, the anarchists will say, well, you don't replace it with anything. Well, that's a problem too, because you leave a huge vacuum in a society that isn't ready to have no government yet. I mean, the fact of the matter is that the world is governed by states. Most people are statists, and it's going to be that way until the state becomes irrelevant. And the state isn't going to make itself irrelevant. It's got to be done intentionally. And you know, I feel you on the issue of, I'm not a statist, and I also don't think that we topple the state and then everything's going to be fine, the free market's going to just take care of it. That's not exactly what's going to happen, because, like I was saying, governments rise out of necessity sometimes. They rise out of, they rise to the occasion. And, you know, a strong man could come in, and look, if we had a revolution tomorrow in this country, I wouldn't doubt if fools made somebody a dictator. and America just became a total empire with an emperor in charge of it. That would not surprise me at all, because people are statists and they want some strong state to take care of them because that's all they know, and they're scared of anything else. And that makes sense. But I think what we need is an intentional movement, an intentional economic political movement, not a complete free market where you just let shit happen. We need to intentionally build the safety nets that people are so scared of losing, and they run to the state every time they think they're going to lose it. And once you get the safety net out of the hands of the state, well, then all of a sudden, once that's really in place and it's actually working well, then we could start talking about, okay, now we need a revolution. Now we can get rid of the state. Now we can say, you know what, we don't need you guys anymore. We're doing it fine on our own. And then, you know, we're talking about years down the line here. We're not talking about this happening tomorrow. I really don't see it happening in the next 10 years or 20. But like you said, Jake, 50 to 100 years, I can see this kind of stuff happening with the help of technology, and especially with the help of augmenting our intelligence, because people, human beings are very, our human nature is very flawed, because it's not that it's bad evolutionarily speaking, but is that we've grown technologically, and our knowledge base has grown so large that our human nature no longer is able to capable of coping with the reality of our of our technology. And that's why we got all this destruction of the ecosystem, all this pollution, all the plastic, cutting down all these forests, because we're not able to understand the true, you know, ramifications of our technology and our ability to use it. Hopefully, as we start developing more augmentation, and I don't want to say full-on transhumanism, but, you know, just get technology helping us overcome the flaws in human nature as we face the modern, you know, situation that humans are facing, then I think we're going to have a much better ability to overcome groupthink, overcome tribalism, you know, overcome all the pitfalls that really trap us in this two-party kind of, you know, my team, your team thing, and my team can do no wrong and your team is always wrong thing. I think these are pitfalls of human nature that used to help us survive, you know, 20,000 years ago before the Ice Age. This stuff helped us survive, but now it's actually helping kill us off, because our technology and our knowledge base has grown so strong, and our ability to cause, you know, widespread destruction has grown so large that we just really, our minds aren't equipped to, you know, understand what we're actually doing right now. You know, and so these are big advances that still need to be made, I think, before human beings could overcome statism, because right now we're kind of trapped in this tribalistic, Republican Democrat thing. That is not going away until we have the technology to help us overcome that stuff, I think. And this is where I hope that AI and transhumanism and augmented intelligence and stuff can really help us advance, dude. I mean, do you think that this technology is going to help us overcome this stuff?
Me?
Yeah, dude.
I guess, yeah, who else would you be talking to?
We don't got DB on yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's going to be a mixed bag. You know, I don't think we're ever going to attain, or I don't know about ever, but I don't know if we're going to attain a utopia, strictly from technology. And certainly the first few generations of a transhumanist future are going to be fraught with peril. And, there will be, Luddites and neo-Luddites, people that don't want technology, think we're selling our souls and all that kind of stuff. So you're going to have all kinds of cultural warfare stemming from that in and of itself, not to mention the problems that could be caused from biotechnology, from nanotechnology, from artificial intelligence. These things will help in a lot of ways, but there's also great dangers that could come from them. You know, with, like they say, with great promise comes great peril. So, I mean, I don't think it's going to be very complex and crazy. I don't even think we can imagine how insane the future is going to be. And just the near future, like, you know, 10, 20 years from now, there's going to be, you know, think of all that's happened. Think of all that has entered our lexicon just since 2000. You know, just the internet, smartphones, cryptocurrency, social media. You know, these are things that are very familiar to us now. These were alien concepts, you know, a couple decades ago. And these things are, and these kind of innovations are increasing exponentially. So the rate of innovation is just getting incredible. And, you know, we're getting to a point where I don't even know how society is going to react to it anymore. But, you know, all of it's serving, unfortunately, it's all serving to keep us distracted. Right now, I think technology for most people is more of a distraction than a tool. I mean, obviously, there are a lot of entrepreneurs and scientists that are using technology in very good ways, but a lot of people are just using it to watch videos on their smartphone and aren't keeping up with some of the larger issues that are going on, such as us drifting closer and closer to a police state, a surveillance state. You know, these are things that are have been pushed in a bipartisan manner down our throats, and people are outraged, but they're allowing it to happen. You know, even after we learn from Edward Snowden and Chelsea Manning and WikiLeaks, just, you know, all these, you know, nefarious things, and that was caused by technology, allowing, you know, both the in my opinion, crimes of mass surveillance, but also the discovery of the mass surveillance itself. These are all things fueled by technology. So that's a good example of, you know, there being a good and bad side to everything.
Yeah, yin and yang, dude, yin and yang. And brings us to an interesting point here. Because I've been really looking at the profit-driven motive for corporations and technology and stuff. And you know, there's no denying that basically what do I want to call this? Super capitalism is based on is hacking into the human nature and finding ways to exploit our brains and to get us to buy things and figure out ways to just extract more money out of people. And this is kind of what drives super capitalism, right? Google, Facebook, Amazon, you know, the super huge companies, the oil industries and stuff. A lot of it taps into our laziness. A lot of it taps into the dopamine in our brains. There's been some really strong criticism recently on Facebook, including former executives. I just saw a recent one with a guy that was giving a talk at one of these universities. I can't remember what it was, but he was a high up in Facebook, and he was basically just talking about how the likes and the notifications and stuff is kind of like a drug addiction, and it really, when you get a notification, when someone likes your post, it's like a little shot of dopamine into your brain, and you're always seeking more. And really, Facebook just hacked our brains and made us want it, you know, and that's kind of, social media is that kind of feedback loop thing. And, you know, I think it's okay, I think, that companies are doing this, but at the same time, look, we got two major drivers of technological advances. You got companies like that, Google, Facebook, Amazon, all these fools that they're investing all the money into AI. They're the ones that are going to own all the infrastructure, all the patents, and all these technologies are going to be owned up by a handful of companies. And then whenever a smaller company comes up and they have a great idea, well, Google buys it, Facebook buys it, Amazon buys the company, and they just absorb it into their ecosystem. And then on the other hand, the other driver of technological advances is the government. You got DARPA, you got all this, the research done with the Pentagon, all the research done by the government, and basically you got two people there trying to, one group is hacking the brain to try to make money off you. The other group is playing off of your fears to sell you more police statism and more wars. And then the feedback happens with them because the government's afraid of losing its power. So they trick you into being scared of terrorism. Well, the government's actually scared of losing its power. So they turn those tools that they've developed for terrorism against the people, like you have with the NSA, like you have with police militarization, you have with the surveillance state and the DHS and the Border Patrol and all the stuff they got going on with that. So you got two basically two bad players that are driving technological innovation, technological advancement. But shouldn't there be a group of people advancing technology for the sake of us, to help us, to make us better, to help improve our lives, to help make things easier for us, to help us not be poor, to help us have a better, you know, all the things we talked about, not being poor, not being hungry, having health care, taking care of the elderly. Shouldn't there be technological advances being, you know, funded to advance our cause, to advance the average person's cause, to help make our lives better? And I say there should be. And we need to start figuring out how we're going to accomplish that. And, you know, basically, we need to have trusts that are set up in the public interest, that are not government, they're not corporate, they're set up to advance technology, technological innovation for our sake, to make our lives better. And so we're dealing with this kind of hydra, I guess you could say, where all this technology is built up around us. And I just saw an article today about how Facebook is sharing more and more government with more and more information with the government, you know. And so not only do these two separate parties, are they advancing one agenda to take money, to make money off you, and the other agenda to help control you, not only is that bad enough, but not only that, but these guys are in collusion together. And so we need to have a third institution out there that actually can possibly be a check on all that, you know, bad shit going on, to say, okay, cool, Facebook sharing their data with the government, but here's some brand new technology that we just got done researching that'll help you, you know, become immune to the government snooping or whatever. And of course, there are companies out there advancing privacy, you know, initiatives and products that help you maintain your privacy and stuff. But again, these companies are for profit, and their main goal is to make money. I think that we should, as a public, start allocating money towards something that, you know, a investment tool that isn't seeking to make money off us, that isn't seeking to control us, that is actually seeking to liberate us and save us money and save us time and resources and all that kind of stuff. I think that would be a great advance, you know, for us, and it would really help us start getting more public interested technologies out there. I mean, what if we had a public interested investment tool that was building AI that was going to be public domain, you know? And it's like, all right, cool, we just got done figuring out how to build these robots that you could have at your house that'll do all the cleaning and it'll do all the work for you, it'll garden for you and all that stuff. And guess what? It's public domain. Anybody can build one. Here are the blueprints. Here's how to do it. And instead of having Google trying to sell you a robot, it's like, here's the public domain version that's just as good, and you could get it for like 1/5 of the cost. You know what I'm saying? I think that's something we should start considering. Because the alternative is looking like a monopolistic statist future, and that's very dystopian looking. That does not look good. And public domain, Creative Commons type of technologies, that's going to be the thing, I think, that, like you said, there's the good and the bad on with both of these things. But right now, the actors who are developing these tools happen to be pretty much mostly on the bad side. So we need someone to something to counterbalance that, to provide technology in the public interest, man. I mean, this is a step that we've been needing to take for a long time. I know there's some stuff out there that already does this on a smaller scale, but I'm talking about we need to start putting trillions of dollars into this stuff. Stuff that'll help protect the environment, advance, you know, cheap energy technologies. I know DB is always talking about figuring out almost free energy. I'm sure that there's stuff that is out there that can be developed that is genuinely almost free energy and stuff like that. So, I mean, what do you think, Jake? I mean, do we need to start a public trust that will start advancing technology for us? Or do you think we can really leave it up to these companies and stuff to bring these technologies to market and hope that they work out in our favor? What do you think?
I mean, I think it's a great idea. I mean, I actually was loving that idea when you pitched it. Yeah, we should have a third, kind of a third tier going on that is separate from corporations and government. But realistically, I just don't see how it wouldn't be either corrupted or acquired by either. You know, the government has a rich history, not just in this country but in other countries, of you know, infiltrating domestic groups of any kind, whether they're a cult, whether it's or whether it's a group for good. And, you know, look at what's happened with Black Lives Matter, which is a group that literally is just anti-police brutality against blacks, or at least that's how it started. And there's people that think it's a terrorist group simply because of government propaganda and infiltration. And that's happened countless times. And then, of course, with corporations, it's like, yeah, I mean, they acquire anything, any disruptive or transformative technology they're going to acquire, and they work together. You know, we basically have a corporatocracy right now where, you know, giant corporations and government are not really even separate anymore. They're overlapping. That's kind of what the deep state is in a certain sense. So I mean, yeah, I mean, it's a really cool idea. I'm trying to think of structurally how it would be safeguarded and quarantined so that it couldn't be corrupted. But we certainly need it. We absolutely need it. You know, maybe that's what artificial intelligence will do. Maybe it'll just be born and then just refuse to cooperate with any directives from governments or corporations that goes against what they see as a basic ethics. You know, who knows what'll happen. But yeah, I mean, it's a great idea. How do you see it being, you know, how do you see it starting? What's the starting point of it?
No, that's a good question, dude. And, you know, the big problem here is that people aren't keen on voluntarily funding stuff, right? And you know, I can give a personal example with the anti-media. You know, we have a donation page set up. We, you know, we've been doing this show for like 5 years or whatever. And we've been running the website for like 4 years. And I'll be straight up, dude. We have not received very many donations. But obviously, we're still in business. We make money through advertisements because people would rather visit our site, passively observe advertisements in exchange for getting our content for free. If that weren't the case, well, we'd be out of business. We would. We wouldn't be able to operate on donations alone because we don't get very many donations, right? So the problem with this idea here is that how are we going to get people to say, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's send trillions of dollars into this, you know, public interest trust that's going to go ahead and fund research that's going to actually help our lives out. it's basically going to be impossible to get people to do that. Half the reason why people give donations right now, and you know, a bunch of these thrift stores are some of the bigger sources of localized charity or whatever, is people trying to clear out room in their closet because they're buying new clothes, so they don't got room anymore, so they give their old shit away, and then the thrift store resells it, and they use it, you know, hopefully for charitable, you know, causes. I don't think people are, like, buying stuff just to donate stuff. I mean, I know I've done that. I know people do that on occasion. But generally speaking, people aren't really going around just donating shit. Why? Because, well, they can hardly make it on their own how it is. You know, people are barely making it, paying rent and paying mortgage and paying the bills and the groceries and the gas and everything's prices keep going up. You know, and so this is going to be the hard thing, is getting the funding, getting people to cough up the money for it, even though it is going to be in the public interest, it is going to help them out. Well, how do we get people to fund it? You know, and that's the big problem. I mean, everybody's like, oh, you know, with our case, it's like, oh, yeah, everybody knows the media sucks, and everybody, you know, talks all kinds of smack about Fox or about CNN or about MSNBC. It's like, okay, cool, you guys know what's wrong. Help us, you know, build an alternative. And then it's like, okay, crickets, right? But, you know, I never ask for donations. I never beg for donations. We have a fine business model working with advertisements. That's totally fine. But the problem is people don't really have a tendency of putting their money where their mouths are. People love to talk a bunch of shit. People love to have opinions. People love to say a bunch of shit. But when it comes down to it, it's like, okay, you want to talk a bunch of shit about... you know, the Monsanto, for instance. You want to talk about shit about Monsanto? Okay, well, hopefully you're putting your money into a local community garden where you could actually get food that's not tainted with Monsanto's glyphosate or whatever. But I don't know. It just seems like people don't really work in that way. They prefer to talk a bunch of shit and not really take action on it. So that's going to be the hardest part, really, is actually trying to get people, pitch the idea, fine. And people are going to be like, oh, great, you give a TED Talk and it gets 10 million views and shit. And maybe you get, you know, a couple $100,000 of donations for a month. And then all of a sudden, everyone forgets about it and then it falls into obscurity. You know, and this is one of the problems. Do people have short attention span? People have limited resources to begin with. You know... It's a bunch of different problems. And the reason why these companies can do this research, well, they're making billions of dollars a year, trillions of dollars a year off you. Well, yeah, they can afford to do some AI research. They can afford to build supercomputers. They can afford to build a, you know, facial recognition technology. And they can afford to read all of your messages and serve up advertisements because they have the infrastructure to do it all. In fact, they've got better infrastructure than the NSA. They outsource it all. Yeah, NSA outsourced all that intelligence gathering to Facebook. You know, and so I think it's a good idea, and I'm totally, like, in support of it. But like you said, dude, it's not only is it prone to corruption and co-opting, it's also not very likely to get funded. You know, so... That being said, it's something we need. It really is. I mean, we can't allow our research to be done only by corporations and only by the state and allow them to collude together to use it against us. And it's just, it doesn't make any sense. And at the same time, here's the thing. We're giving them a bunch of money. We give Facebook money. By being on their platform, we give them money. By being on Google, we give them money. We're paying them, and they're researching to make more money off of us. Instead of voluntarily paying somebody to do research in our favor, you know, and it would make sense if you put it like that. But still, it's just it is pretty far-fetched, I think. But it'd be interesting. It'd be interesting to see someone put it together and pitch it well. Anyone listening tonight want to do it, go for it, because I don't got the time to do it. Anyway, What else you want to talk about, man? We got some time here. I don't know what else to cover. We got plenty of news to go over too. We could do some more alien stuff. Jake, you did some more. We got another interesting article about how scientists discover that life can form in the vacuum of outer space. I mean, dude, again, we just talked about this on Monday. But more and more stuff keeps coming, dude. I swear, I feel like they're getting ready to reveal something.
Yeah, they keep getting everyone's hopes up with these press conferences. Everyone thinks all of a sudden they're going to announce alien life. I mean, look, as exciting as it would be to find microbial life, which is what essentially what they're talking about when they talk about life forming in space, is basically comets or asteroids, because they contain water and carbon, that despite the radiation, life can still form. The basic organic molecules that make up life can form. I mean, that's exciting and whatnot, but at the end of the day, like, it'll be really awesome when they finally discover microbial life, alien life, and it will happen. I mean, pretty soon, I'm guessing. But I mean, I want to find intelligent life. And, you know, so one thing I just turned in today, you'll see it soon, it's about, Lockheed Martin actually, a university did it too, but Lockheed Martin and NASA are working together on an AI that can filter through all of the information from the Kepler telescope, missions in space, and then once the James Webb telescope gets up there, and this thing, I don't know if you know about the James Webb telescope, this thing is going to make Hubble look like a hobo, man. Like, this thing is going to be like 100 times more powerful than Hubble. We're going to literally see the atmospheres of exoplanets, and we're going to be, basically what they can do is they can analyze the light frequencies that are reflected off planets and go through the planet's atmosphere, and then based on the spectra of those light wavelengths, they can determine what the atmosphere is made of, and then based on that, they can determine whether it's likely if life could form there. So that's going to make it a lot easier for us to target planets for possible future space exploration, although that's way in the future. But also, just you know, eventually AI, I think, is going to be helping a lot with just looking for signs of life in the universe, and that's pretty exciting. But yeah, man, there's so many things going on in science right now. It's pretty overwhelming, and it's like, shit, humans don't even know how to deal with themselves yet. What are we going to do with another alien race? You know, like, I don't even want humans to, I mean, even I'm contradicting what I just said, but I don't even want humans to find an alien race right now, because we're not evolved enough for it, which is probably why we're not finding them. They're probably avoiding us, because we're just not evolved. We're either going to view them as the other and, you know, declare war on them, especially if they're, you know, less advanced than us. Of course, I don't know how a less advanced species could get here, but if they're more advanced than us, we're going to look like fools, you know, like, and we're going to make fools of ourselves. So, I don't know, man. I mean,
maybe we'll finally get some bipartisanship out of it, right?
that's what Reagan said in 87 at the United Nations. He said, you know, it was kind of a famous speech, but he was like, you know, our petty differences would go away if we were encountered by some species from beyond. But of course, he's basically insinuating that we would have to join together to go to war with them. And then yeah. Clinton said the same thing in an interview with Jimmy Kimmel. I mean, I swear they just repeat the same shit over and over again, but yeah, I don't know.
Republicans and Democrats agree we must kill the other guy. Yeah.
Well, it's the most profitable industry on the planet, creating weapons to kill people.
That's damn right. So yeah, life forms can form in the vacuum of outer space. That's pretty amazing news. I guess it's if you're a biologist, if you're a biology nerd like I kind of am, you'd know that they've found bacteria, you know, down in the depths of oceans and near underwater volcanoes and stuff. Oh, yeah. Where it's you know, very, very remote, very high temperatures, very, very little, almost no oxygen. And,
it's called extremophiles.
You know, if life can be found there, then it's pretty likely it can be found, you know, on places like Mars and on the moons, which tells you that, well, then it could probably be found on other stars and stuff. And life has this tendency, when it's subjected to radiation, to evolve, you know, and when it evolves, it pursues surviving. And, you know, it's pretty logical to think that, you know, there's much more advanced life forms out there than bacteria somewhere around, even in our own solar system. It's pretty likely that we may find it somewhere. So yeah, that's interesting. What other news we got today? Here's a good one. U.S. legalizes the funding of the creation of deadly viruses. So again, back to the conversation we were having earlier about the science of destruction is what basically is being pursued right now by corporations and states. There was a ban on researching basically how to weaponize viruses, and the Health and Human Services lifted the ban on funding that stuff. So, you know, there's some good news to look forward to. The U.S. is going to be pursuing deadly viruses in the near future. Some funny stuff. At Disney World, they unveiled their Trump robot. I don't know if you saw this, Jake. It looks an awful lot like Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
People online were saying, well, Disney started building it. They thought Clinton was going to win, and last minute they changed it to Trump. So you could, I guess, bear the resemblance. That's pretty funny. I actually wrote about that today because every now and then I want to write about some lighthearted shit.
It's also like a weird, like almost allegorical meaning to that, which is there really that much of a difference between these two corporatist warmongers, you know, like, and they're both animatronic puppets?
Exactly, dude. It's like very ironic and very good. Crypto news, Litecoin founder Charlie Lee got out of Litecoin.
That's what we should have been talking about this whole thing. Cryptocurrency is fucking crazy right now.
Blowing up, dude. I went to the liquor store ahead of the show to go pick up a beer. You know, I like drinking a nice beer while I'm doing the show, just kind of calms me down. And the dude at the liquor store is just shooting off questions to me about cryptocurrencies and stuff, and he's talking about getting involved. It's spreading, dude. It's spreading. Oh, hopefully,
it's growing, man. It's
like a virus.
It is, and the government's doing everything they can. They're sending out all their financial sentries to try and call it a bubble. You know, they're doing everything they can, and they can't stop it because it's like people are hungry for a decentralized monetary platform, and blockchain is unstoppable. So it's like Bitcoin and the other ones, they're going to go up and down. There's going to be corrections, but blockchain is unstoppable.
Yep, exactly. So Charlie Lee, really liked the guy, really smart guy. He's not the greatest public speaker. I'm not a fan of his interviews and stuff, but he makes really great posts. He's not good at verbally speaking, but his written stuff is really good. He got out actually to avoid conflict of interest because people always, they follow his post really closely, and if he says something, well, then the price will shoot, you know, the value of Litecoin will shoot up, you know, $10 billion if he says something cool or something. So he got out because he's supposedly trying to reduce conflict of interest. He says that he's still going to dedicate his entire life to developing Litecoin and stuff, and so, you know, that's interesting. I think Charlie Lee is one of the better actors out there. Of course, in the crypto sphere, a bunch of greedy people out there, a bunch of people trying to scam people. like you said, blockchain technology, the underlying technology is amazing, amazing technology. It has the capability to transform the financial system, and blockchain has the ability to remove third parties from many, many different industries. It basically, you can cut the middleman out of a lot of things. There's a really good project. It's an Australian project called Power Ledger, and these guys are building a blockchain that it's going to allow people to buy and sell electricity from their neighbors that have solar panels. So it's basically a decentralized power grid that it cuts out the power company and allows people who, you know, as more and more people put solar panels on their cars and on their houses and stuff, it's going to allow you to buy and sell energy directly to your neighbors. And so, and so you're cutting out the energy company, so you're cutting out a middleman, you're getting a cheaper cost on your electricity. And if you're a person who invested in solar panels, you can get some return on investment by selling your excess electricity to your neighbors. So this is a really, really cool project. Things like this is, you know, what I see blockchain being very useful, cutting out middlemen everywhere you look, you're cutting out companies, you're cutting out monopolies, and you're cutting out governments, and you're cutting out banks. And the more we can cut all those things out, well, the better it is going to be for the average person that's, you know, trying to get electricity or trying to store money or trying to make payments or, you know, trying to, you know, do whatever, a bunch of different things. Contracts like Ethereum is a great smart contract platform. You know, a bunch of different applications are being developed now. Of course, you know, the crypto, I wouldn't call blockchain a bubble, I wouldn't call Bitcoin a bubble either, but there's thousands and thousands of different blockchain projects, many of which are just white papers. Some of these things have billions of dollars already of market cap, and all it is a white paper. It doesn't even have a product. It's not even getting market share. It's not doesn't have market value, doesn't have a marketable product. A lot of this stuff is going to fail. A lot of it's going to fail. But when you're looking at this crypto stuff, do strong research. Look at what they have. Look at the products that they're developing. If they already have a product, even better. Look at the team behind it. If you can't find out who's behind it, well, I wouldn't buy into that one, because it's probably a scam, or it's probably someone not doing any work or actually developing a smart business idea. But this stuff is going to be transformative, especially in 2018, man. I mean, a lot of these projects are bringing their products online in 2018. If you haven't got involved yet, now again, I'm not an investment advisor or anything like that, but if you haven't gotten involved yet, not too late. 2018 is going to be, I think it's going to go down in the history as the huge year for crypto and for blockchain technology, because a lot of these projects are coming online. There's a few cool projects for cloud computing, where basically you get the cryptocurrency, you put it in their wallet, you store it on your computer, and it basically, you allow your computer to be used as a decentralized cloud, and then you earn money by allowing, you know, letting out hardware, hard drive space on your computer. It's encrypted. You can't like view the stuff that people are storing, but you can earn money by just leasing out unused space on your computer. And so a bunch of different projects like this that are, you know, becoming really interesting. And then we had one today on, what was that, yesterday? Where you could, there was like bodysuits where you can just like lay there and the heat and the power of your brain is like mining cryptocurrency. You saw that one, right, Jake? Anyway, thank you all for tuning in. That's the end of the show. Anti-Media Radio. We'll be back Monday, and I think these guys are going to be back on tomorrow. Thank you all for tuning in. Peace out. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.